In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
Hey, Happy New Year. It's Jeffrey, and great to be with you two guys again. 2009, everything is fine.
I hope so.
You know, I was pretty excited about 2008 coming around because I got into the numerology of it just being a very even number. I think I talked about that on the show a year ago. You know, it was like 2008. That's really easily divisible. I can do that kind of math. Somehow, 2009... I'm like, okay, those are some odd numbers, but I still feel really good about this year coming forward.
Well, it's easy to divide it. You take the 2 and the 0 on the left, and you put it into one pile, and you take the 0 and the 9 on the other side and put it in another pile. Got 2 numbers on one side, 2 on the other. It's that easy.
I can write 2009 faster than I could write 2008, if that means anything.
I haven't screwed that up like on checks or anything yet, mostly because I haven't written any checks yet this year, so it hasn't been a real problem yet. And I think I'm going to follow that program for a few more months at least, see how long I can go.
Good luck for that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we had a long hiatus over the holidays, and there was a handful of news and events that came along. The biggest one, of course, most everybody is aware of by now, but I think we need to say something. Honor the passing of Majel Barrett Roddenberry, who, of course, is most well-known for her involvement in the Star Trek series, but is Babylon 5's very own Lady Morella as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you know, that happened while we were on hiatus, so we obviously didn't get to say anything at the time, but, you know, we should still remember, you know, that the characters that she played, and you know, I think it's easy that to see that, you know, as far as Star Trek goes, she might have been overshadowed by everything else that went on. But I think her portrayal, you know, Lady Morella was good. And I think some of her turns as Loxana Troi were excellent as well.
You want to hear my Majel story?
Please, sure. Absolutely.
I kissed Majel. No.
No.
No, no, wait. That's not a true statement. Majel kissed me.
Aww.
Serious kiss on the lips.
Ooh.
No.
On stage in front of a bunch of fans.
Okay, do tell.
Yeah, exactly. I think, if I recall, it was a little sci-fi convention here in Burbank. LostCon, I think is what it's called. And we, a bunch of the B5 actors were there. I don't remember what season we were in, probably... three or four, and Majel and her production partners had developed a project with Doug Netter that I believe at the time the working title was what was the Travolta movie? Battleground Earth?
Battlefield.
Okay, so it was the opposite. I think this was called Battleground Earth at the time. Huh. And so it was looking good, and they were excited about the project at the time, and so I don't know, somehow I guess the stage, we were all the actors were on stage and we were doing our talk and all that sort of stuff, and then it was like time for Majel to come up and make this announcement about this project that she and Doug were doing, and I guess I was the last person with the microphone, so I went to hand the mic off to Majel so she could talk about it, and she just walked up and just planted one on me, and I was like, oh, my God. Majel, just, wow. It was wet, too. It was kind of cool. But I digress.
That's borderline magnitude.
I guess.
Did she stake you for someone else, or did she really miss you? I mean, did she really, really miss you?
I'm not sure. It just caught me by surprise. It's not, you know, uncommon to give that little air kiss or a little peck on the cheek as you're, you know, doing that cordial thing to make it look good in front of the fans that you're all buddy-buddies. And not that I wasn't buddy-buddies with Majel. In fact, you know, Gene Jr. and I are Gene Jr., you know, Rod, as he's preferred, you guys know him as, you know, Rod and I were friends for many years, and I think we still are. We just don't talk much, as is the way life goes. But so she knew who I was. Yeah, there was no doubt about that. But so late at night, sometimes I sit up in bed and just think about that.
All right, then.
As well you should. Well, I understand part of her involvement, the reason that she appeared on B5 as Lady Morella was, you know, in the midst of the whole B5 versus DS9 hubbub that was going on, which was, you know, as much of really more a fan manufactured thing, you know, she wanted to appear on Babylon 5 as much as a way to say, you know, to bridge that divide, if you will.
I hadn't heard that. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, I think that's how I remember the story. So, anyways, we miss her.
Yes, she will be very missed.
Absolutely. One other thing before we head on to the main event here. This is some information a couple of people have sent in email about to the Babcast about upcoming JMS appearances. And in fact, in his own news list thing, JMS mentions that he is slated to be the guest of honor at the New York Comic Con February 6th through 8th. And he's been invited to speak at MIT on May 22nd as part of the Julie Schwartz lecture series.
Wow.
Which I think has to do with not popular arts, but you know, television and arts and that kind of thing. But he does mention something here that later this month, in addition to continuing to turn in screenplay assignments, he says, quote, "I'll be turning in the pilot script for Last Words, an hour dramatic series with a paranormal thrust, being written for TNT and DreamWorks."
Hmm.
And he says, parenthetically, it's a new crowd at TNT these days.
Wow.
Oh,
any details about what it's about, or is that hush-hush for now?
That's it. And actually, keeping tabs on the news group mailings that they do, he mentioned something about this project, but never said anything about who it was for or what, just, you know, a new series coming up, and this is the most he said so far. And I think at another post, he mentions that he will be showrunner for that.
Well, there cool. You go. That's
something else to keep an eye out on.
Exactly. And I applaud anybody in this industry that's still working. So, way to go, Joe.
Absolutely. Well, he seems extremely busy.
And I suppose over the next few weeks, we'll have plenty to talk about whether or not a strike actually happens.
Oh?
Well, I just, you know, I mean, it's not that it's relative to B5 per se, but just that if indeed a strike of the SAG actors happens, you know, that's going to have long-reaching impact on the industry.
Yes.
And on the programming that you see, and the personal economies of many, 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 many people in Los Angeles. So there you go.
Suddenly reality shows are looking pretty good, huh?
Well, I think this...
Don't ever say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is... reality shows are the product, not a byproduct, but a direct product of the last big series of strikes. So, yeah, wake up.
Yeah. All right. Well, anybody else have any last comments to make before we jump into our very special...
Yeah, Summer, so tell us, for those who can't tell because of the poor quality of our show tonight, we're recording this one here at the Los Angeles Farpoint Media Studios, because Mike is off doing something fun tonight. Tell us what he's doing.
Yes, our good buddy Scott Sigler is in town at Changing Hands Bookstore in Tempe as part of his book tour for his new book, Contagious, that came out in hardcover, I believe, either December 30th or 31st. So Mike and Brian and Mike Stackpole are literally at Changing Hands right this very second, probably trying to get Sigler to snort his beverage out of his nose while he's signing someone's book. I don't know.
So he's playing hooky. It's not like he's sick, down for the count, or, you know, can't stand us anymore.
And it's only fair that he gets to go out and play every now and then, because I did play hooky to go see two authors I really wanted to see. And I might have joined them tonight, except for, you know, tonight's guest is just got me all giddy inside like a schoolgirl.
Very good. Would that be an MIT schoolgirl by chance?
I'm thinking I'm more of a Stanford or Caltech.
Okay. Well, take us out and we'll see if we can get our guest on the phone here.
All right. We are going to take a really, really quick break and come back with just, I'm thinking it's going to be hard to top this interview this year. Just saying right now.
Many were infected. Infected with a disease that thinks. A disease that talks. And as the victims finally succumbed, a disease that walks. One man fought back. He resisted the voices. Perry Dawsey carved out pieces of himself in a desperate attempt to survive. He won. But as Perry awakes in a government hospital, he realizes he can still hear those voices. It's not over. And now it's even worse. Because the infection has become contagious. Contagious is the bloody sequel to Scott Sigler's horror thriller, Infected. Contagious is available in stores December 30th. Or reserve your copy now at scottsigler.com/preorder. Get the book the day it comes out. Because if someone spoils the ending, you'll hate yourself enough to use the chicken scissors.
Babcom link established.
Hello, this is Ed.
Hey, Ed, it's Jeffrey. How are you?
Jeffrey, how you doing, buddy?
I am excellent. You sound terrific.
Well, good. I'm in my car.
Nice and loud signal. Listen, I'd like you to meet my two co-hosts, Tim and Summer. Say hi to Tim and Summer.
Tim, as in the one below my nose, or Tim?
Timothy, as in Timothy, the original Timothy.
Okay. Hey.
Hi, and then, Tim.
Hey, Tim, how you doing? And the other co-host?
Summer, hi.
Hi, Summer. How are you?
How are you? Ecstatic.
So, for those in the listening audience that can't quite figure it out yet, we've got Ed Wasser with us, the infamous Dangerous Morden is with us this evening. So welcome to the Babylon Podcast, and thanks for doing this, and thank you for taking time out of your personal life. I know you're out with your son right now, and you're stepping away, and that's absolutely an indication you're an irresponsible parent.
Well, if I hear a big scream, the bloody face shows up, I'll be gone that quick. In Orange County, Vans Skate Park. And every now and again when I step away, that seems to be the time when he gets hurt. So
is this skateboarding?
He's a skateboarder.
Wow.
Yeah, he's pretty out there. It's all he wants to do in his life. He's like Tony Hawk.
Nice.
You know.
Nice.
So well, thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me on the show and having a little chat. That's cool.
It's very cool.
You are probably one of the most anticipated interviews that we've had lined up.
Oh, I can't believe that.
You were the most requested guest all of last year. They kept pestering us. When are you going to talk to Ed? I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, I,
Yeah.
You know, why don't you hang up and keep them waiting? They'll stay tuned for, I don't know, another year. No, I'm joking. Anyway, that's cool. The thing about Mort is that, you know, you didn't really have to do much except smile and say Straczynski's lines, and it was all over from then on in. It was just like Morton had its own life, and I was always so fascinated how mesmerized people were by the character.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think people are mesmerized by Morton?
I just think it's because everybody likes the bad guy. And I think that, you know, specifically with Mr. Morton, it was just one of those guys that you love to hate, and he was likable. So I think, you know, and the fact that he pulled so many strings in the arc of the show, and you barely saw him, made him extremely intriguing. It had nothing to do with me. I had to do a show up.
No, when it comes to bad guys, Morton is way up there at the top of the list of super bad guys. And it's because he had so many layers that were kind of pulled away very slowly. So you never really knew just how bad he was. It wasn't like he just showed up one day and started kicking ass, you know, and taking names. Conversely, you know, we knew all the good guys on the show, and we knew pretty much where their limits were, but Morton, holy cow, the slightest squint of an eye could suddenly make that character so much more mean and miserable, and you did awesome with him, dude. You really did.
Oh, thanks, Jeff. So I think a lot of it has to do, really, with the mystery. Isn't that always the thing, you know, keep the audience wanting more? And I think Joe did that. I think Joe knew just when to him in and when to get rid of him. And it just kept people wanting more. And no one ever really got enough of him, except, I mean, Fear. Yeah, but it was just a well-written character, really. Really.
So,
it was fun.
How was it as an actor, though, playing a role that is obviously pivotal to this overall story, but I was checking on IMDb, you only appeared in 13 episodes over 5 years.
And isn't that amazing?
Such an influential character, but, you know, how was it for you to know that this guy was influential, but Joe may not call you for 5 months or whatever?
Well, I mean, from a financial point of view, it sucked. You know, it was a bummer not to be working more. But from an actor standpoint, dealing with the character, you know, it was Morton was one of those characters that you just, there wasn't, It was hard to bite your teeth into him. You know, you couldn't really, he was so smooth and so slick that there wasn't really a whole lot of emotion going on. So the challenge was to really be present with the characters that I was working opposite of. You know, that was the only thing that I think that I had to hold on to. When I showed up to the set, I didn't really have, you know, I didn't really have any. Morton doesn't have any emotional range, really. I think the only time we see Morton get emotional is when Londo blows up and says, "Take off his head." That's right.
And that was the end of it.
That was the end of it. And I'm still waiting for my head to grow back. What's up with that?
Well, I can say for myself that part of the appeal was watching someone who was very cool, calm, and collected, very smooth, with a charmingly engaging smile, who you knew was planning to kill as many people as he could or have his associates do it. And there just didn't seem to be anything to rock him. But you couldn't help but be attracted and drawn in by his charm. He fully believed in what he was doing, and I think that's what drew a lot of the fans in. You have this seemingly innocuous, handsome guy who's just evil behind the charming face. And you don't get a lot of that in sci-fi television until you. So thank you for that.
Wow. Thank you for that. I think that Morden did believe in what he was doing. I think Morden really thought that his was the way, just like George Bush thought his was the way. It's unintentional. He just thought that was the way, right or wrong, you know. And I think that Joe really wrote Morden very, you know, you learn more about Morden when he's not around than you do when he's on the set, you know, when he's on the screen. There's so much more that we learn about him, and that's really cool. And that's, I think that's just good writing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
So how did you come to be Mr. Morden in the first place?
Well, I begged, groveled, and pleaded. And I stood outside with a little tin cup with dark glasses and started singing Dixie, and they just said, wow, what a great Morden he would be. Anyway, the way that happened for me was I actually started out with Mary Jo Slater and Dory Zuckerman at the time, who was one of the casting directors for Babylon 5 when they first started out doing the pilot. And Dory had said, hey, Ed, why don't you come in and be a reader? And at the time, I was kind of in my ego and said, no, I don't think so, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to go back to New York. And Dory said, well, you know, I think it'd be a good idea if you were a reader. And I'm going, well, what exactly does a reader do? So I learned the process and came in and became a reader at Dory's suggestion, and I was very grateful for that. And what happened was I got to sit around with the producers and the director and, you know, John and Joe and all those guys. And one thing led to another, and they handed me a script, and it was the pilot, and they said, okay, why don't you pick a part? Tell us what you'd like, you know, what part you'd like to do. By the way, any of the parts that have names attached to it, you don't get to pick those. So you get to pick number one, tech number two, or tech number three. So I figured tech number one would be a good place to start. So I picked tech number one, and I came to the set, and I was very techie, and that was it. And then the show got picked up, and they said, hey, Ed, would you like to come in and be a reader again? And of course, my ego popped up, and I went, oh, a reader again? How about a part? But I humbled myself, and I said, okay, thank you. I'll come in and be a reader. And I think two or three, maybe four episodes had gone by. They had done casting for, and, you know, now I'm kind of feeling like a family. And so Joe and I had it wasn't a bad relationship. It wasn't a great relationship. It was just, you know, Joe is very respectful of me, and I, of course, was trying to kiss as much ass as I could and be as useful and as needed as I could be. And one day, Joe offered me a part as a maitre d' for the... Jeffrey, what was that?
The Zocalo?
Forgive me for not remembering. The restaurant. And so, and I looked at it and I thought, wow, you know, I'm really grateful. It was a couple of days later, I came back to Joe and said, well, I'm really grateful for the offer. It's really thoughtful. Thank you. But don't you have something for me that has a little more meat to it? Something a little more dangerous? I had no idea that he would come up with Mr. Morden, but that's how I ended up with Mr. Morden. That I actually said to Joe that I really didn't want to do the maitre d'. I was hoping that maybe he could find something else. and there it was.
Man, that sounds like the premise of the spinoff we should have, More Than the Mater D Murderer.
Yeah, you come to the door and he says, "Welcome to Morton's," and flashes that smile, and then you wonder if you really want to be eating there.
Oh, boy. Right. Anyway, so that's how that went down. And then, of course, the first day that I shot, you know, Joe says to me, pulls me off to the side. I can't remember now exactly. I don't think he pulled me off to the side. I think I went into his office at the end of the day, and he made a comment that just sent me spinning, and I felt like, you know what, I'm lucky. And he said, "Wow, it's just not how I saw Morton at all. I really was hoping that it would be more like, you know, more like your personality, the me, Ed, I guess, is really what he was looking for." And I went for something else, and he didn't say good or bad. I do recall him saying something to the point that he was a little disappointed because that's not what he was looking for. And then, days later, he calls me at home, which was such a great phone call to get. He said, "We just sat through the dailies, and you did a great job. It's what we want. It's great. Good job." You know, I might be exaggerating about how forthcoming he was with the compliments, but it was something like...
I was sitting here with my mouth hanging open going, "You got a phone call?"
Get that. I did get a phone call. I mean, he was very respectful. I was grateful for the phone call because I was feeling like crap for 3 days going, "Oh, I upset the great maker, and now I'm not going to, you know, now I'm really going to have a short life." But, you know, it didn't work out that way. He let me off the hook and said it was good. And then, of course, you know, Morton didn't come back for a while. And then I thought, oh, it couldn't have been that good. I think most actors have, or I shouldn't really speak for most actors. For me, at the time in my life, my ego was so wrapped up in being an actor and how it defined who I was, and if I wasn't working, it didn't feel very good. And so not having the steady work and not being able to count on another episode was, you know, a bit of a bummer. And you just go, okay, you chalk that one up and you start looking for your next gig. And sure enough, the phone calls kept coming every 6 months, you know, periods in between. But still, it was a great experience, and extremely grateful for the opportunity. A lot of fun. I met some really great people along the way. Jeffrey, you're included in that.
Thank you.
It was just, you know, it was a nice experience. Of course, Peter Jurassic was just awesome. Just awesome to be on the same set with him and to work with him and to be supported by him. Just a great guy.
I seem to recall, didn't you also, while you were on B5, weren't you also jumping over to Sliders from time to time? Did you have a gig over there?
It wasn't any magnificent. I don't even remember it so long ago. I think that was before Babylon 5.
Okay.
I think Sliders was before Babylon 5. Somewhere. You know what? You're right, Jeffrey. I'm not even sure. It's a lifetime ago, really. It is a lifetime ago. When did the show, what was the last time the show was on the air? Was it 6 or 7 years now?
Well, Babylon 5, it's been 10 years.
Ten years. Wow. Now I'm married with a boy, and by the way, just for the record, I'm also a grandpa.
Whoa! Whoa!
Yeah.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Congratulations!
Wow!
my two girls, my wife's first marriage. When I met my wife, the girls were 9 and 11. And now they're 23 and 25. and the 23-year-old, Ashley, and Eric, they had a baby girl. Her name is Dylan. And we are now grandparents of a beautiful baby girl that's 5 weeks old.
You are an amazing grandpa. You would be like the best grandpa ever. I can just tell. You are. You are.
Nice and close. And I look at him and I go, what do you want?
You show him a picture of Morden with all that burnt skin on his. That'll scare the bejesus out of him. Keep him in line.
Now, Ed, given that it was as long ago as it was, playing the character and seeing how he was being written, did you anticipate that he would come to no good end?
No, you know what Joe is a master at, keeping everybody in the dark. It kept me in the dark. I really shouldn't speak for everybody else, but I had no clue. I had no clue where Morden was going to end up. Who knew that the day that Veer sits down at the table with me and says, you know, what would make me happier is to see your head on a pike. Who knew that 5 years later that's where I'd be? I had no idea. I'm sure. But, you know, no one told me. Gee, don't you think someone would like to know? Hey, cut your head off, I'm going to put it on a pike. Yeah. But no, I had no idea.
If you could have been any other character on this show, who would you have gone for? Would you be a good captain, you think?
I wanted to be Kosh.
No. No.
I don't think that I would have been a good captain. I don't think I would have been. I don't think I would have been ready for something like that. No, but I wouldn't have minded being maybe more like a, maybe Garibaldi or even Jeff Conway.
Yeah, Zach. Yeah.
I think any one of those two would have been great. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have played either one of those two parts.
Mm-hmm.
So you're too good looking to be a cop.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Yeah.
Since you mentioned wanting to be Kosh, was there any hijacks or shenanigans going on in the episode where Morden got to witness Kosh being killed?
None that I can remember.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Hijinks were rampant everywhere all the time, but I don't remember any outstanding silliness that happened.
Remember? I mean, I know that there are a couple of gags that happened that I got pulled into that made it on the gag reel, which was kind of funny and fun. And now I my memory is like a sieve. I'm trying to remember the exact moment, but it had something to do with Bruce looking at the monitor and going, does that man look dead to you? Does he look dead? and it's Mr. Morden on the monitor. He's being held captive. Mm-hmm. And then Bruce looks back at the monitor, and there I am, dying. There are a couple of weird, fun moments like that that I remember. But mm-hmm. You know, I really wasn't there. I wasn't. You know, when you look at it, thanks for the statistic, by the way, or the piece of information that it was only 12 episodes. I don't even remember how many episodes I was actually a part of. People ask me, so how many years were you on the show? And you know, I go, I was a part of the show for 5 years, you know. How many episodes I don't know. 8, 9? I'm not really sure. I felt like maybe, in my head, I thought that maybe I had done 2 or 3 episodes a year. That's what I had thought. So it was kind of close.
But looking back, it's all good memories.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for the experience. I you know what I think was really awesome 2 for me. And it's not like Babylon 5, by the way, has opened up any doors for me, which is a bit of a bummer. But, you know, I really enjoyed the experience of traveling and meeting the fans and going to the sci-fi conventions and just meeting all the people that made it possible to be on a show like that. You know, the fans really showed their support. That was exciting. I met some great people, you know, the president of my fan club. The fan club is such a joke to me in a way, as it really, you know, I feel like I'm they're my fans. I feel like I'm their fan. I feel grateful to them. But Byron Reese, who actually started that experience for me, the fan club, has turned into such a great friend. So those are the things I remember, who the people that I've met because of Babylon 5 and the relationships that I've sustained because of that experience. That was really cool.
So how many conventions did you get to experience?
Oh, I'd say I was probably doing, I probably did 3 or 4 a year, you know, for a little while there for the first couple of years, and then it tapered off, as everybody knows. It dried up a little bit towards the end there, but I got to go to England, and I got to go to Ireland, and I mean, I went everywhere. I mean, it was fun. I got to travel the country and go to Chicago, go to New York, go to Dallas and Ohio, and it was just fun. It was fun. At the time, it was a great journey. And funny that you should mention Sliders. Funny that you should mention Sliders, because I believe it was Dragon Con. That's the one. Atlanta. I actually, Tracy Torme was a guest at that convention, and we ended up sitting at the same table together. And Tracy is the writer, producer of Sliders, and since then he's gone on to do really great, great stuff. He, he was behind that great Will Smith movie. Anybody who had the disease and the dog and what was there?
I Am Legend.
Yeah. Tracy actually played a role in getting that show made, that movie made. Anyway, make a long story short, we became the best of friends from that convention. And he then reminded me, kind of like you did, Jeffrey, that I actually went into an audition where he was on the other side of the for Sliders. And it was very funny, because it was one of those auditions where I was supposed to come in with, you know, where I was holding somebody up with a gun, and it was another bad guy, right? Holding somebody up with a gun, and I decided that in that particular audition, I wasn't even going to let them introduce who I was. I just busted into the room and then proceeded to accost everybody in the room with a, you know, of course, with a fake gun. But Tracy remembered that and had a good laugh about it. And I went, oh, my God, that was you? He goes, yeah, that was me. And then we put you in the show. Don't you remember? Oh, yeah. It was funny. Babylon 5 has, in that way, has been extremely rewarding as well, where I've really made some great friends, great friendships.
Well, Grandpa Ed, we thank you for joining us and sharing this with us, and also for your effort to coordinate. I know it took us a couple of weeks to make this happen because of our mutual busy schedules and the holidays and all. So just thank you for hanging in there and your willingness to participate. We mean it. We love it. We love you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. And just for the record, it's Papa Ed to you. Okay,
okay, good. Very good, Papa. That's great.
And thank you very much. It's been very entertaining to talk with you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night, Ed. And take care of your family. Thank you.
Jeffrey.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Do you like to write? Or have you always wanted to write, but decided that your job, your house, your family, your pets, your political affiliations, your volunteer work, your hobbies, your church, and that ache in your pinky you get on days ending in Y slow you down? Many professional writers have families. Many professional writers keep their day job. Many professional writers live their lives just like we do. Only they write, too. Like you should be doing. I Should Be Writing is the award-winning podcast that explores issues wannabe writers come up against every day. Everything from characterization to just the difficulty in getting on a writing schedule. And because I, your host, am a writer who's still learning, we do a rundown of my progress as well. This is not a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do type of show. I'm there in the trenches with you. Visit ishouldbewriting.com to subscribe to this free podcast and download past episodes. Because you should be writing.
And you know, it occurred to me as we were talking, for the open, we were being so coy. The people are going to go to the website and they're going to see Ed Watzer interview.
Yeah, they'll know right away, huh?
Right.
Oh, well.
That's all right.
I got to tell you, he is just one of the, and always has been, he is just one of the sweetest, most gentle, and genuine salt of the earth guys.
And that's why he made such a delicious bad guy.
Uh-huh.
It's really funny because I didn't realize he'd only been in 12 or 13 episodes. It's like Walter Koenig. You think he was there more.
Right. Exactly. Wow. The cast. Such a long shadow over everything.
Yeah.
You know, that was Ed's comment, is that you learn more about Morton when he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's funny. I actually, for some reason, have burned into my mind an anecdote that someone I knew, I didn't, like, know her in real life, I just knew her online. She'd actually gone to a con and seen him, and when she was having something signed by him, she like put on this act and she pouted, and he's like, "What's wrong?" He's like, "Well, Santa Kosh didn't get me what I wanted for Christmas this year. You think you could help?" And he looked at her and said, "What do you want?" And her response was a very coy Jason Carter on a leash, which apparently busted him the hell up.
Okay, that's just wrong.
But funny.
Uh-huh. That's good.
That was good stuff. What else you got, Tim?
Well, we got some voicemail. We got some email. So why don't we do the voicemail first?
Really? Do the voicemail first.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. We can probably figure that.
I think this is, Mike will be mad at me because I'm pushing buttons and I'm not authorized and, you know, I'm certified. But
all right, give your card.
Yeah, union. The union's really going to be pissed at me now. But let's see if we can get this one.
Hey guys, this is Gary. I just wanted to put a shout out there to Brad and thank him for putting together those four holiday little gifts for us. I know we had heard them before in different parts of the shows and stuff like that, but it was nice to have them all together and be able to run them nonstop back to back. I was really smiling loud. That curler Sigillan always cracks me up. Thanks again, Brad. I know it wasn't easy pushing through it. You were really crazy at work, but I do appreciate the effort and time you put in. Take care. Happy New Year, everybody.
Oh, he's such a
nice, thanks, Brad.
Nice guy. You know.
Yeah, Gary gave me a break also by actually posting those to the feed for me. So,
yep.
We like Gary.
We do.
We should have him on the show more. We should just call it Gary Alon 5 or something like that. He's so nice. And rightfully
roll the next one.
You know. Oh, okay. All right. We'll just roll the next one here.
Yeah, see, next one.
Let me see if I can make this one work any better.
Hey guys, it's Gary. I'm listening to episode 139 and hearing you talk a little bit about Forbidden Planet. And I was just thinking about, oh gosh, I wonder what he'll do differently for the remake. And then it occurred to me, instead of Robbie the Robot making scotch or whiskey for the cook, he'll make him Zima instead. Bottles and bottles of nothing but Zima. Sounds like a great remake to me. Take care, guys. Bye.
Oh, the pain.
We are never. We're never going to get away from Zima.
And when the crew goes into the Krell complex, they'll run into Zathras.
Very funny.
Oh.
No.
Beware, monsters off the id.
I would think at this point you would just throw up drinking too much Zima before you'd ever get buzzed on it. I you know, it was so sweet. Oh, God. Yeah, that was god awful shit.
much like Mr. Morden and Psycop Bester, Zima made one appearance on the show, and you want to talk about having a presence?
Really?
Yeah. All right, so you got one more voicemail here, Tim. What is this one about?
I don't know. Play it. Let's see.
All right.
Hey there. Okay, actually, let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
That was it.
And as far as I know, I don't think she has yet. So we're waiting for that call back.
That's when you know we are a really, really, really big show. You know, when we're so desperate for callers to come in that we'll even play it if you hang up on us.
That's right. We didn't have a whole lot of content over the holidays, so we don't have, like, you know, 12 Gary voicemails.
Wow.
Yeah.
That we got a hang up or wow. A call. Or was that a wrong number?
No, it sounded like she was really ready to start yakking away there, and she was very. Should we? You want to hear it again? Let's. It's good enough, and it's fast enough. We can certainly play more of them. Let's do it again. Here you go. Listen again.
Yeah, that sounded like she was, you know, starting off, getting ready to talk to us. So, hi. Thank you for calling.
I envision that she is a hardcore geek that really had something to say. And right as she was starting to, she got sweaty palms. She was nervous about calling in, but finally got up the guts to do it, made the phone call, and like a coworker walked by, and she didn't want to be heard,
That's
geeking out, you know?
That sounds like a toddler getting ready to go into the cat box. And
you think we have a mom that got a 911 call there? Is that what that is?
Yes. It was like, oh my God, I've got to get her out of the cabinet or something like that.
Hey there. Okay. Let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
I think we've got the Christmas reel already figured out for next year.
So do we have any emails?
Hey there. Okay. Let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
There's another reason why the union's going to be pissed off.
And I also know what needs to go into the new show intro when you guys get time to do that, you know.
Well, yeah, I've got a couple of emails here. This first one comes from Mike G. from New York. He said, this had me laughing for hours. And he gives the URL, www.whosdatedwho.com/celebrities.
Uh-oh.
/people/dating/Jeffrey-Willard-HTML.
Oh, wow. Oh, boy.
It says, I'm not sure which is funnier, the, quote, related profiles of other celebrities or the fact that Jeffrey is considered a celebrity. What made me feel sorry for you, Jeff, is on one of the sidebars, it says, fans, and then it says, Jeffrey Willard has no fans.
No. That's just wrong.
And, you know,
the internet is a wonderful, wonderful place to play, isn't it? Source of all knowledge. Good grief, that's funny. Who dated who?
Yeah.
How about who cares about whodatedwho.com? That should be another one.
Yeah, unless you're researching that, you know, you're on your second date. It's like, does he have any diseases? Yeah. Other than that, who cares?
Yeah. After you've done your eHarmony or one of those to meet the person, then you quickly go, okay, now that I know his name, let's
go. Who dated Jeffrey Willard?
Who did who? Yeah, exactly. Wow. And no fans.
No fans.
There was a time, but alas, no more. Wow.
such as it goes.
Yeah. That was great. What else you got, Tip?
Well, I've got one here from our friend Kate in Chicagoland. She says, "Hi, Badcasters. You asked for ideas for discussion after you had exhausted the source material. How about geeking on the character arcs? Pick a character a week, trace how they have grown and changed, how they affected the B5 universe, and what made them vital to the course of the events or not so vital."
Ooh.
So we'll put that in the idea hopper. So, one last one here. This comes to us from James in Tallahassee. And he says, "Over the years, I made a lot of B5 ships out of Legos. Most were Earth Alliance. The blocky look is quite suitable for the Lego medium. But I also made many Narn, Centauri, Minbari, and ISA ships. I even made some Borkiri vessels. Now you guys have inspired me. I need to dig into the back of the closet and see what Lego pieces I can dredge up and come up with a suitable new B5 design."
Wow.
Yeah.
What I'd love to see is if he had taken pictures of any of those and share them with us.
Yeah.
That's what I'm, yeah. And as a segue, I'm starting to get my act together. We got a couple things over the holidays from Neil Ottenstein, who sent in some pictures of the Vorlon's first visit to Earth. Here we go. Here's my heathen sensibilities kicking in. The major scene. What do you call those things?
I have no idea what you're talking about, Tim.
You know, at Christmas time, Ari puts up the little plastic baby Jesuses. And
The nativity?
Yeah. Nativity?
Nativity. There you go, yeah. Well, a couple of Vorlons are hanging around in there, so go ahead and check those out.
Now I get it.
He's got Vorlons as the three wise men.
I think, you know, more like angels of portent.
That's funny.
And then Mark Lucid also sent along a Babylon 5 take on the Night Before Christmas, which is a very entertaining read.
So, okay, are we going to post those?
Those are posted right now, in fact.
Awesome. Oh. Yeah. I would. But do you have any idea how big you would have to make a Lego ship for it not to look like...
Well, yeah, 5 miles long if you're doing the station.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, some of the Minbari ships and stuff, that stuff is also sleek, and I don't know, Lego to me doesn't sound like a sleek, you know, I don't think about...
Well, and that was James' comment. The Earth Alliance stuff, which is all blocky, is much more amenable to Legos.
Ah, right. Sure. You could do the Agamemnon with no big deal.
Right, exactly.
Somebody found a picture online, somewhere on the internet, of a white star someone had did in Lego. So I'm going to have to dig that back up and post that on the website. Because that was kind of cool looking.
You know, I want to take issue with something else there.
What's that?
I do have a fan. I do. And let me introduce you to her, okay?
Hey there. Okay, let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
See? she was about to say, "Connect me with Jeffrey. Give me the bat phone right to his office. I gotta talk to him. He's my favorite."
I think that's just a quirk of that site. I'm hoping they're not being cruel.
Well, for what it's worth, Jeffrey, the related profiles on your page are you ready? Christina Aguilera, Helena Bonham Carter, and Mark Wahlberg.
Nice. I would sleep with any of them. I would date all of them at the same time. That would be a party. That's
or maybe
great.
It is that they none of them have fans either. I don't know.
Well, I'm in good company then, is what you're saying.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was like, how many fans do you have on your MySpace page?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I don't have a MySpace page.
Okay.
No. And MySpace and Facebook and all the social networking. I'm not a social person. And so, subsequently, I don't like people. No, that's not true. You know that's not true.
But, apparently, they don't like you either.
Yeah, exactly. No, I have... I don't know what my hang-up is about all that, but I just can't seem to find or justify time in my day to play with that.
I understand.
Yeah.
Why? How many people are on your MySpace?
I don't have Facebook or MySpace either. But I was just trying to say maybe, you know, it's only to that site where, like, if on Facebook, on my MySpace, you have like two buddies or something, you know. That's only in MySpace. So maybe on this celebrity website that nobody goes to because they don't care who's dating who yesterday, nobody cares.
Yeah.
It's just zero people on the who's dated who.
It was very cool to hear Ed say, give us his comment about his fan club. Because, you know, you recall he said something to the effect of, you know, how wacky was this that I had a fan club, but he did, and that got set up. and at that time, like, we all did it right away. You set up these fan clubs, and you had a webmaster that would do that stuff for you, and somebody that would organize a newsletter, and you were sending out stuff, and it was like, and people, man, people were signing up for my fan club like crazy, and I was sending them stuff, and it was like this whole thing. So if you were a former Kosh Club fan club member, call the show, because first off, A, we need more voicemails, because Tim can't seem to muster any on his own. And B, Gary's voice is going out on him. And C, I so want to apologize to ever having you join the fan club because you didn't get shit for it.
Now, don't call up expecting your $20 back.
Right, right. You know, maybe that's exactly what happened, you know. Maybe.
Hey there. Okay. Let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
I bet that was one of the original fan club members right there. I bet that's who it was.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's too funny. All right, Summer, get us out of here. My head hurts.
Oh, well, if you want to send us an email, that email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. You can also join our forums. We have an entire forum, including a never-ending thread at 83 by 9 by 12 at farpointforums.com. And help us... help Jeffrey. Call our voicemail line. Leave us some voicemail. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Hear the unintelligible voicemail came upon us all.
Hey there. Okay. Let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the dial.
On the next Babylon 5.
Hey there. Okay. Let me call you back in a minute. Bye.